I could tell you how to get there, but that would only help. I could tell you, you fly into a town where they say the blues is in trouble, where they say all the younger set are going so heavily for the hip-hop, and it's hard, they say, to get people to support basic blues. You get into a car and you drive south. You go from a big road to a little road to an even smaller road, and just when you're about to give yourself up for lost, when you're looking around like you're in another country, you're there. Only, you're not quite, because I can give you direction, and you'll arrive at Otha Turner's picnic, the last of the great picnics. But that's really only half of what you need. Here, let me show you what I mean. You drive these roads and you get there early. You find Otha Turner's farm, see his house, which is not a trailer like the ones next door, but a house that stands in front of a pig pen and a caged, wailing hound dog, and the spot where they'll kill, skin, and barbecue two goats in the morning. Behind the house, there's an older white man. He used to be a Mississippi Highway Patrolman, he tells you, and this is his first picnic, too. He's just gotten there. Just backed his huge Ford F-250 into Otha's yard and unloaded the pipes, the tarps, the rope to make a tent. Because no rain, Mr. Otha says, no rain is ever going to cancel a picnic. So you stand in the drizzle and you help assemble this tent, and you try not to think about this state trooper, this Good Samaritan, this man, this white lawman, who may or may not have fought in America's second Civil War, who may or may not still be fighting. This man, this generous man, who will tell you in just a few hours to, look at that woman over there. When the light hits her just right and you get her in just the right profile, doesn't she look exactly like Whoopi Goldberg? No, put that out of your mind. Move out from under the tent towards this other man, this black man with short white hair and a blue mesh cap. He's walking towards the overhang and he swaggers. He moves with the strength and confidence of a man who's worked the land hard his whole life. He's shaven, though how he works the razor between those deep lines in his face is a mystery. He's got silver blue eyes, and when the light hits them just right and he's staring straight at you, they reflect. They look right through you. In a few seconds, they'll start telling you a story, and you'll start to believe everything you've heard about Otha Turner is true. Otha Turner, the last of the fife players. Otha Turner, former sharecropper. America's last living link to a culture that, like him at 94 years old, simply and stubbornly refuses to die.
He said, oh, I don't know if you be smart in the dusty. Do like your mama tell you, I'll make you. When? He said, you got to give me time. I'll make it. When I make it, I'm going to call you. I wish you'd make it. He's making it. Going along the road. I said, come out, Otha. I run up there. He said, here, your price. I took a look at that. Thank you. Where are you for? He said, nothing.
And then, about 17 seconds into this astounding story of how Otha Turner, living legend, first picked up an instrument, first learned how to play a fife, you realize you don't understand a single word he's saying.
You try. But if you don't make a start, you ain't going to never do that. I think.
Well, actually, my first memory of the picnic is when I was a little bitty boy. They took us over to see a picnic, but I remember being up on top of a hill sort of looking down on the picnic, and we watched Napoleon play and Otha Turner play and a bunch of other people. The picnic was very, very large, but it was totally black people at that time, and we were just sort of taken down there to watch it from the hill. That's what I remember. I was a real little bitty boy at that time. That's my first picnic.
Oh, man, you weren't even born. You weren't even born. That was way back in the, what, 40s. And the first picnic I went to.
About 8 years old.
What do you remember about it?
The fife and drums, the music. Mostly when you're young, that's about the first thing catch your eye, the music.
And you were 8 years old and you were running around.
So I wasn't running around. I was standing in the back of my daddy's pickup truck. We wasn't allowed to run around because there were too many people there. And my mom didn't want us to get lost. We would get out and go get us a snowball or something like that and go back to the truck. At that time, it was other.
Well, that's pledging. That's pledging. Folks work hard all the weekend. Got nowhere to go, no enjoyment, see. All right. When they found out, I used to give nights of them at night to play in the house. Born in the land, where no lake to life. And the people would come down and they liked it and they'd see that.
So at that time it was all black and then the whites were watching from up around?
Mostly. There were a few people that were down there sort of mixing in, but obviously we were young children and this was the 50s and we just sort of were taken to go watch and listen to this unusual music that clearly then nobody ever heard anything like that in the white community pretty much. So yeah, it was much more segregated than the kids.
What's the first image you have of American music? You have the fife and drum player with the little piece of string wrapped around his bleeding head, marching down the battlegrounds. And I mean, that military music was the first music that we really brought over here. What I've heard is that the slaves, you know, picked up on this military music, and it was a music that they could play, that their owners would allow them to play. And what they did, as usual, is make it even better and more soulful, and it took on a whole new thing.
And according to Alan Lomax, this type of music is very popular in Senegal, where people make their own fife instrument out of bamboo in Senegal. A lot of the slaves who came to this area were from that area in Africa, number one. Number two, the slave owners and the slaves developed a very strong bond in this part of Mississippi, and that the slaves almost became a part of the family, and they were never sold. So you had people going back who lived here and played some of that type of music, and it just sort of stuck in this area because you had that strong tradition and that strong sense of community here.
I believe it was in 47, the first real picnic I remember my mama and them giving. We lived it down there in the Delta part of Mississippi. And my uncle, he come down there and he played a little bit, and then there was some more people that come played drums. Hey, Freddie Brooks them and his brothers. Now they used to have a good band. All them people died out. Man, there used to be a lot of people in here that played old music like that. So did.
Otha Turner and his Rising Star Fife and Drum Band have two records. David Katznelson's the label exec. He says the music will get to you like it got to him. He says the music, it's transcendent, and when you first hear it, it sounds great, and the second time you hear it, it sounds great.
But then all of a sudden you start getting a need to hear it, and then when all of a sudden you hear the drums starting up, it's like, oh man, and then all of a sudden it opens up in this weird, great musical world, this wonderful place that's, I don't know, it transcends, you know, reality, which is, I'm sure, what they were doing at the very beginning.
Back in sharecropping days, the picnics were during the lay-by. That's after you've done all your planting and sowing and cultivating, when you just have to wait for the cotton or the corn to grow. So, nothing else to do. Why not have a party? Why not invite everybody from everywhere? Why not bang on that big bass drum, which in the days before all this noise we're so used to now, you could hear for miles? Oh, the Turner says the picnics were competitive. You'd throw one, and then I'd throw one, and mine better be better than yours. These days, however, Otha Turner takes first prize every time because, just like he's got the last fife and drum band, he also has the last picnic.
This is the only one left because most of the other people have died out and or in nursing homes or disabled to do it, and so Dad is the only one that still does it.
The picnics are bigger now. There are more musicians. It's not just fife and drum music, but North Mississippi blues. And more guests, more visitors, more tourists come too. The purists will tell you that it's getting too big. That the 200 people crammed in between Otha Turner's house and the pig pen, about half from out of town, those are mostly white, and the rest from around the area, mostly black. The so-called purists will tell you that it's getting diluted. But like the college girl who threatened to trip me if I didn't have Otha's permission to record, most of the so-called purists are at their first or second picnic themselves, and more than that, most of these complainers aren't even dancing.
What are your favorite parts about the picnic?
Gosh, I only get goat once a year. And to see some of the faces, the same faces that come back year after year after year. And it kind of seemed like family. You know, we all grow closer. I think it's kind of like a reunion thing. You got people that want to come every year to this, you know, this particular event at this time, you know. And it really touches my heart because some of them leave here, we never hear from them. But a lot of them will write me a little postcard, tell me how much they enjoyed it, and you know, stuff like that. And that really is kind of, it touches you.
I mean, there's just a bunch of people getting together and hanging out, and everybody here has one common love, which is music, and the other common love, which is just camaraderie and hanging out. And it's truly an egalitarian space in that sense.
But, you know, every day is a new thing. And, like, you know, Richard Johnson's setting up right now, and he's a great player. Luther's going to be coming down. He's great. I mean, last year it was like R.L. Burnside and T-Model Ford. And this last night was had a bunch of the Burnside, you know, sons and grandsons. And it's amazing because one guy wrote about 3 or 4 months ago how the blues is dying in this part of the world when, in fact, there is players galore, and all you need to do is come to the picnic, honestly.
For the enjoyment. A picnic just like a family union. A family union, people come full in here. And you're having all the fun you want there, and all the music ain't nothing else to you. You ain't got to worry about nothing else.
And what you realize after spending a couple of hours at Otha Turner's picnic, as I recommend everyone do, after you've eaten some of the barbecue goat or pork and talked with Jim and seen how everyone seems to pick on Chip, but that's okay because once Chip starts singing, after you've drunk a few beers and maybe some of that Mississippi moonshine, after you let go of your notions of who belongs and who doesn't, and you even see that state trooper dancing over there with his son. He's fetched him from home so as not to miss this. After a couple of hours, two things happen. First, you start to understand Otha. So you know what he means when he says something that you can do and the people like it. I think it's low-down aggravating. You don't do it.
See, that's where I see it. It's like you want me to hear me blow that can, and I know I ain't playing you, I can do it, and I sit there and look at you and do it. That's low-down. So that's the way I hear. And that's what I believe in.
Second, you figure out that here, in the middle of nowhere, Mississippi, the sons and daughters of those sons and daughters of former slaves and slave owners have figured something out. Here, there's a rhythm to life and pleasure, and as Otha Turner himself puts it, to the enjoyment that seeps in underneath, that gets to you. And the first time you feel it, you think it's great. The second time you feel it, you think it's great, but what you get by going to Otha Turner's picnic is that third time, when the drums come in and it's like, oh man. Somewhere near Senatobia, Mississippi, on the edge of the hill country, I'm Benjamin Adair for The Savvy Traveler.
You got more. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.